Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the television ratings for the fall 2018-2019 TV season. Now, I love these episodes because Sam does all the number crunching on these. Makes it a lot easier on me, so thanks, Sam, for doing that.
Not a problem.
I will be honest, I am kind of behind in my TV watching this season. I've watched a couple of things, but not as much as I would like. There's so much going on these days.
There really is a lot going on. I was really good this year. I just purged a lot of stuff. I just went, eh. And so I'm now, I'm pretty much caught up, but I'm not watching nearly as much as I used to.
Most of what I'm watching, my sister and I have fallen into kind of binging when it gets to a convenient point.
Yeah.
For the CW shows, we waited for those to get up to the crossover and then kind of binged those to catch up and then watch the crossover and such. And then there's only a handful that we've kind of started to try to stay current. Again, there's just so much going on, which is a good problem to have. I mean, if you had told me that there would be a period where we would have just so many comic book-based TV shows going on and other good stuff to watch, you know, I don't know that I would have believed it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So how are the networks doing overall, kind of this halfway point, or actually a third of the way point or whatever for the season?
The simple truth is it's all about live football and nothing else much matters. If you look at, and they're not on this sheet because I only track scripted programming on this sheet, but if you look at kind of like the horse race of which networks are doing the best, ABC and CBS are both down about 15% year over year.
Mm-hmm.
NBC is flat to up like 0.25%, and Fox is up almost 2%. And that is the addition of Thursday Night Football on Fox and the loss of Thursday Night Football to CBS and NBC and ABC choosing not to air its football on its broadcast network, but instead on ESPN.
Yeah, football's definitely got the strong following. So
yeah, and it's funny when you look at, like, last year, I looked at the year end, like the top rated programmings of the year. It was of the top 50. 47 of them were football.
Wow.
One was one, I think, game two of the World Series last year. One was a news item, I think, like a State of the Union address. And the other one was also, the other one was premiere, the new premiere of Roseanne last year. Those were the only things in the top 50.
Hmm.
So yeah, live television is about live events these days. Scripted entertainment with so many streaming options, DVR options, recording options, people just don't watch live anymore.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. There's so many commercials and just the scheduling around the TV doesn't make sense these days, I think.
Yeah, and there's very little need to watch it live.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, sure, there's the internet, but I don't think there's as much water cooler talk about television, again, because it's so diverse and so many different people watch so many different things. It's not like half the country's watching one thing anymore. So you don't get those kind of conversations going,
yeah,
you know, just kind of in public.
Well, and if you do, they tend to be something that is either you're watching the show or you're not. So the people,
yeah,
who are in the discussion are a bit more limited than they used to be. Again, because,
yeah,
like you said, so many people are watching so many different things.
Yeah. I should have kept, I don't know where it is. I'll look for it. I pulled up, and I'll post it on the forum. I pulled up, there was an article that showed the number of scripted programs actually on the air, and it's going up. It was something crazy last season, like 736 new scripted programs. Now, to be fair, that also includes things like original streaming programs. So things like Star Trek Discovery, the Netflix shows, the Hulu originals. But yeah, it's amazing that so many are being produced, yet the overall viewership of any individual show just pales in comparison to decades gone by.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it also brings up, what we're going to talk about is the network shows. So we're not going to have visibility into things like, again, the Marvel Netflix shows, or Krypton on Sci-Fi, or Titans on the DC streaming service, or Runaways over on Hulu. I mean, there's just not only the plethora of options on network TV, but the wide diversity of stuff outside.
That is true. And for the year end, I can pull some of the numbers for the stuff that airs on cable. At least Nielsen does track cable ratings. I don't tend to put them on these sheets, but I can do that for the year end. The streaming stuff basically isn't done.
Yeah.
Obviously, the companies have it. They own the servers. They know who's watching what and how much of it. But those tend to be very cryptic press releases with no real data to back them up. And there is, Nielsen at one point tried to include things like Netflix and Hulu in their numbers. Well, not in their numbers. They created a new set of numbers for that. And Ted Sarandos, the head of Netflix programming, has vehemently argued that they're just wrong. I tend to think they're not as wrong as he likes to say, but I don't think they're as accurate as these are.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And it's kind of a different beast in so much as the way they get watched, the way they get released often with, you know, seasons getting dropped all at once in many cases. Although not all, because again, Titans was a weekly release.
That seems to be more of a Netflix thing. Hulu, most of their original programming has kind of gotten into this cadence of releasing two or three, like on release day, and then releasing them, you know, one a week. Titans did that. CBS did that with Star Trek. So it'll be interesting to see as we get more and more of these streaming services, how they choose to go about that.
I kind of think I prefer the I don't know if I prefer the all-in-ones or the week-to-week. I think they're better off with the week-to-week because it stretches out the opportunity for water cooler talk, whereas, at least in the circles I travel in, you know, like Daredevil Season 3 got talked about the weekend it got released and a few days after, but, I mean, I still haven't gotten to it yet, and the talk has long since died down.
I tend to agree with that. It's interesting because some of the early Netflix shows, I was never into it, but I know I had friends that were very into House of Cards. There was a lot of buzz about those when those seasons get released. Same thing with some of the early Marvel shows, the Daredevils, the Punishers, the Jessica Jones, kind of the first time around. But the show I've kind of seen the most internet chatter with, and again, this skews towards my personal taste and the corners of the internet I'm in.
Right.
Hulu did a series based on Stephen King's fictional town of Castle Rock.
Uh-huh.
And those were released week to week. And I think if you go back in the Slack channel, you can see where Drew and Don and a few of us that were watching that show kind of as there was a lot of, oh, I wonder where this is going. And there was a lot more of that get with kind of the dropping the season all at once.
I think dropping the season all at once precludes that kind of discussion.
Yeah, it really does. Again, with Castle Rock, the big Stephen King nerds, even like literary YouTube channels and, you know, those kind of things, a lot of them would do weekly recaps and, okay, what do we think will happen next week and stuff. And again, when you kind of release it all at once, you miss out on all of that.
Well, I know there are some podcasts on things like Once Upon a Time and stuff like that, and I think the weekly release schedule on network TV worked in its favor.
Yep.
I don't know, and again, I've never looked, so again, it's the corners of the internet I hang out in. I don't know that any of those have been done for shows that drop all at once.
Yeah, like I said, the only one I'm particularly familiar with, again, is Castle Rock, because it was a week to week, and there was a lot of, ooh, what's this mean? What's this mean? Where can we go from here?
I think the serialized release gives room for that speculation, whereas the all at once release for a season, it's, oh, you want to find out what happens next? Just watch the next episode.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in speculating. It's a click away. So I think we're seeing some changes in how scripted TV is getting out there. And some of that I think is good. Some of it, I don't know. There's just so much that it's fighting for its time with other things. You know, it's kind of hard to not feel that all the plethora of DC shows we've got right now are kind of almost cannibalizing their own viewership because there's only so many hours in the day to watch.
Well, yeah, and that's going to be interesting because they have their own streaming service. And I was looking at this and I believe Warner Brothers announced a new streaming service plus the DC service plus... I was looking at it. Warner Brothers will, by the end of next year, have, assuming everything gets released as they plan, 4 unique streaming services. And there is a point where how many can people subscribe to? And are you getting 4 different audiences? Are you kind of making people choose which of the 4, which one or two of the 4 they want?
Yeah. I think one company doing multiple services that way is a bad idea unless there's some clear branding or whatever. Like if Disney wanted to do like a Marvel one or a geek one that had Marvel, Star Wars, that kind of stuff, and another one that's kind of a classic Disney kids kind of a thing, I could see that. But I don't know that Warner Brothers really has the clear branding to justify that.
Oh, well, Boomerang, that's one of the 4. So they're kind of, the old cartoons is one of the 4 they're doing, because all the Looney Tunes and stuff are on that one.
Yeah.
So that's one of those 4. Disney, assuming this Disney streaming service comes to fruition in this year, will at least have 3, in the fact that with the merger with Fox, they are a 60% holder of Hulu.
Uh-huh.
They have the ESPN streaming service, the ESPN Plus, I believe they call it, plus whatever that new Disney, Marvel, Star Wars one that they keep talking about will be. So again, you know, Disney will have 3.
I can kind of understand that because one's very sports-centric. One is, again, Marvel, Star Wars, kind of not exclusive, but centric. And then the other is just kind of the, I almost want to say open market approach to it.
Yeah.
But there's only so many dollars people are going to spend on this, and having fewer of them and more focused or ironically enough, less focused, you know, more build your own or a la carte or however you want to do it, makes sense. I mean, Netflix is an easy cost to justify because you get so much stuff there.
Which is becoming the new problem. You know, obviously Disney's not re-signing with them.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers chief executives already suggested that many Warner Brothers things won't be renewing. Netflix, one of the reasons they're pushing so hard in their own creation is, again, when all the studios, everybody else has their own thing.
Yeah.
Netflix will be dependent on what they produce instead of simply buying, you know, 10 years ago when they were first starting to think of those licenses were cheap because nobody else had anything and nobody saw the value in them. You know, they were sitting in vaults and went, hey, if you want to do this with it, sure, give us something. It's better than nothing.
Yeah. But the landscape has changed so much.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves over the next few years.
The other thing that's going to be interesting to see is if advertisers ever think the audience is large enough or niche enough that they start paying the same kind of premiums they were paying for, you know, big broadcast television. Because, you know, a 30-second commercial on a broadcast television show still is averaging... You know, you're still talking 2,700 and up. During major sporting events, you know, you're talking 20 to 30,000 and up. However, to be featured on one of the streaming services that has commercials, those are literally pennies. So it'll be interesting to see if Madison Avenue changes and says, well, if all these people are watching that way, maybe those streaming commercials are worth more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll then also be interesting if companies like Netflix and Hulu, to some degree, already has it and has 2 tiers. And, you know, if that advertising money becomes valuable enough, will there be, you know, fewer of these ad-free streaming services? And will it, you know, can you lower the cost and kind of split it? Hey, you'll have to watch a few commercials, but, you know, instead of $10 a month, it'll be $2 or $3 a month.
Yeah, I prefer the commercial free, but... It's where the money is. Yeah. That's going to decide the fate of it.
Yep. So yeah, that'll certainly be interesting. Let's take a look really quickly at the top 10 for the season overall to this point. Okay. Not a huge surprise. The top rated show on network television is still The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
2.24 average household rating. And again, that is 2.24% of the U.S. population age 18 to 49. That owns a television. This is the other thing that gets weird. Technically, ratings is a percentage of the population, but it only considers people that have access to television. In the early days, this was a bigger deal because there were areas that simply had no reception, etc. Many homes didn't own televisions. That number went to almost 100% by the late 80s, early 90s. It has started to slip down again. The percentage of people that don't have access to broadcast television is lower than it's been in 30 or 40 years, again, at this point.
Interesting.
And not significant, but again, it's no longer that near 100% it used to be. It's hovering around the 97 percentile.
Mm-hmm.
This is Us right behind it at a 2.22. Again, that was bolstered by some huge premieres, and it's kind of been neck and neck with The Big Bang Theory early in the season and has fallen off a little. Young Sheldon next, with its, Big Bang spinoff. Again, not surprising that that would be the most popular thing. Grey's Anatomy over at ABC, that show just continues year after year to be amazingly popular through, they've turned over, I think, the entire cast almost at this point.
I was going to say, is there anyone left but the title character?
I've never watched the show, so I don't.
I stopped after about season 6. So it's the fact it's still going is impressive, and still doing as well is really impressive. Yeah.
Yep. Next is The Conners. The Roseanne spinoff, very popular, doing extremely well. Obviously a big win for ABC. There's always kind of the what could have been. If you remember last year, it was actually above The Big Bang Theory. And, you know, who knows if that is natural attrition or the loss of the star hurt it as much as some people think it might. But again, still doing very, very well. Empire over at Fox continues to do well. The Simpsons over on Fox doing very well. Simpsons, though, anything on Sundays on Fox, and to be fair, anything on Sundays on CBS gets a bit of a boost when those, particularly in the fall, when those networks have the late afternoon NFL games. For all the complaining people do, oh, the show started late, my DVR recorded it wrong, et cetera, et cetera. The people watching football tend to leave the TV on and just keep watching.
Mm-hmm.
And both the CBS and Fox shows tend to end up with about a 0.2% increase the weeks they have the late game as compared to the weeks they don't. So those are good. 911 over on Fox is done really, really well again. Not a surprise. It's a second season show that again turned over quite a bit of its cast. But very popular. The next one's a little interesting. Manifest is currently on average still in ninth place.
Okay.
If you actually track the individual episodes, it follows the timeline almost exactly like Timeless did a number of years ago.
Interesting. Okay.
It started with 2.5s and 2.6s and is down into the 0.7s now.
Got it.
So like I said, while that season average is still well up there, it isn't tracking anywhere near that anymore. And Modern Family on ABC, again, steady, classic. What are they on, 13 seasons, I want to really quickly. Yeah, they're on their 10th season. So, yeah. You know, the other thing you and I have noticed, and really the first time I've noticed since we kind of started doing this,
mm-hmm.
old shows. you find something that works and you stick with it is so much safer than trying to find something new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you've got an established audience, it's easier to regain lapsed fans than to build up a new audience from scratch on a new show.
Yep.
And if you can hang on to them, again, Grey's Anatomy, Big Bang Theory, there's a lot to be said for you've got something good and it's working. Don't break it. Keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if you look over, let's go over to kind of ABC.
Okay.
You'll notice its top four shows arguably are its four oldest shows. Grey's Anatomy in its 15th season being its top show. The Conners technically is in its first season, but it's a show with 11 years of history behind it now. Modern Family's in its 10th season, and The Goldbergs in its 6th season. Again, it's so hard to get something to break in to people's time. You know, at this point, it's almost like people are like, oh, you know, we'll find our streaming or do whatever. And, oh, yeah, I still like that show and it's still on, so I'll make time to watch it.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that they've got so many shows that have been around for a couple of seasons and stuff like that, again, it gives you some anchors to place other shows around.
Yep.
It's funny because on ABC, I think the only thing I've watched was the first couple episodes of The Rookie, which had a number of familiar faces, Nathan Fillion among them. And we just haven't gotten back to it after we watched those first couple. But I don't think I'm watching any of these other shows.
I actually watched quite a few of them. It's funny. Let's talk about the new shows this year. Obviously, The Conners, we kind of already discussed. Yeah. It's technically new, but let's face it, that's not a new show. The Kids Are All Right is a comedy that fits right in with It's On That Night with the Goldbergs. And it's on a night with a bunch of comedies that do okay. It's kind of like a remake of the Wonder Years in the 70s instead of the 60s. You know, it's about a Catholic family with a lot of boys, and it's funny, and it's a half hour, but it's got some more serious kind of coming of age stories mixed in. I enjoy it. It's doing okay. It should be fine. But yeah, Single Parents is another comedy with Brad Garrett and, oh, I cannot remember the name of the lady that's the star of that show. But it's on the cusp, to say the least. I'm looking up, the name of the lead actress, Leighton Meester, I guess her name is, along with Taron Killam and Brad Garrett, like I said. Like I said, it's kind of a cute show. It is what it is. And then you've got the two dramas, neither of which probably have much of a future. The Rookie, which you already spoke of, it was on our list to watch. We never got around to it. And kind of, I saw the ratings and after five or six kind of went, eh, why bother?
Really, it was one that if they had had a lesser cast, I don't think would have lasted any time at all. But they had Nathan Fillion, Firefly, Castle, etc. One of the lead actresses, whose name I'm blanking on at the moment, was from Dark Matter, so we were familiar with her from that. The guy who plays the captain was on Alphas and one or two other things, so familiar faces.
So, yeah, I'm assuming you're referring to Elisa Diaz, who played Angela on the show?
I think so.
And the sergeant was Richard T. Jones.
Richard T. Jones.
Who, yeah, again, more familiar to sci-fi fans, both yes. those shows you mentioned, which I'm not sure relates to a police procedural on primetime television.
Well, I don't think so, and it's a pretty generic police procedural.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, it reminds me of like Adam 12 and stuff that, you know, that old and older of their beat cops, they're doing the stuff. And even the name, The Rookie, I get why they called it that. But how applicable is that name going to be if it were to go three, four seasons? So I didn't think it was one that had a multiple year run in its future.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like it will. The other new ones, A Million Little Things, also not doing as well. This show I actually watch and really enjoy. An outstanding cast of, I don't want to say stars, because there's not really any stars on the show, but it's kind of a who's who of B and C list, very good actors on in an ensemble cast. It's outstanding. You know, Stephanie Sostak, Grace Park, Christina Ochoa, Christina Moses, Allison Miller, Romney Malco, David Giatello, Ron Livingston, of course, Sam Hudson. Again, it's a solid ensemble cast of good actors with a really, really unique premise. And I think are really well done and really touching, but it's not connecting with the American audience currently.
Yeah, it's got a couple of people I think are really good. You know, Grace Park, James Roday and stuff. This thing totally flew under my radar, so I haven't checked it out at all.
Well, and it's weird. I ended up watching it alone, and the two, you know, my wife and a friend of ours that we watch most of our television with, you know, kind of at the beginning is, hey, who's interested? And both of them kind of said, what's it about? And I went, well, it's about a gentleman who commits suicide and then his friends coming to terms with that afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both like, that sounds depressing. I don't want to watch it. And so I wonder if the subject matter just turned, because it actually is kind of an uplifting, touching show, but that kind of quick, what's it about pitch didn't make people, ooh, I definitely want to watch that.
Yeah. But it's got a couple of people in it I'm curious about, like Dante Brasco. He was one of the voices on Avatar The Last Airbender, I think.
Okay. Yeah. No, like I said, the cast is phenomenal, and they're really good in their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think the show's very touching. Yes, obviously it's not the most uplifting thing, but it kind of is. For dealing with such a tragedy, and to be fair, all the other people on the show are dealing with other tragedies in their own lives, there's an air of hope and lightness to it that actually is kind of uplifting and heartwarming.
Interesting.
So, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Nothing else overly surprising on this list. The Good Doctor continues to do very well in its second year. Station 19 is doing very well in its second year. Did I leave Splitting Up Together off this list?
I think you did, because I'm not seeing another second season show or that show.
Yeah, let me see, because I think I have it in the... Yeah, actually, if you type that into the space below the list of shows, it will populate. I just forgot to put it on this page. The underlying data is all there, and it's a comedy in its second season. It did very well kind of to begin with, but has also been tailing off. Right now, it looks really strong because of where it's kind of positioned.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see how that does. I another show I actually really enjoy.
Cool.
So yeah, you want to, anything else you have to say about ABC, or you want to move on?
No, let's move on. Like I said, I really didn't watch much they had this time around.
Fair enough. Let's go over to CBS. CBS, another interesting network in one thing that's interesting, I don't track it. CBS actually sells its ads instead of on the 18 to 49 that most networks do. They sell their ads based on the 18 to 54 demo. So while these ratings are still fairly accurate, CBS, things that are a little lower that do well with that 50 to 55 group,
mm-hmm.
they get a little more traction on CBS than they would say on some other networks.
Interesting. Okay. Good to know.
Only because of the way they're set up. I don't have a lot of insight into this, but obviously with the news, major shakeups in the corporate hierarchy over there at CBS currently going on, with Les Moonves and one of the largest critics kind of the traditional rating system. So let's see. Top of the list, of course, Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, NCIS in its 16th season just keeps chugging along. Mom doing very well. A show I really am enjoying, kind of a new show called The Neighborhood. Cedric the Entertainer, Beth Byers kind of new show. I think it's really good. I've always kind of liked Cedric and felt he needed to find something that would help him kind of get to a wider audience. I think that show's really good and well done. Mm-hmm. Like I say, you watching any of these that are interesting to you?
The ones I'm watching are kind of the lesser rated ones. Obviously, I'm still watching, I am still watching MacGyver, although that's one that's kind of lost its way. And I think they're losing one of the main actors.
There is some shakeup going on there. That being said, it's on Fridays. It's kind of, for Friday, it'll be in its third season. It definitely will be fine. Is it lighting the world on fire? No, but people that are home on Fridays watching television watch it, and it does well enough.
Yeah. I haven't even started the season of SWAT, although it is on my list to get to.
That one's got bigger problems.
Really?
Well, it's a second season show, so it'll probably survive, and they'll probably limp it to 4 or 5 seasons. But it wouldn't surprise me if a show like Hawaii Five-0 on its 9th season goes, or Blue Bloods, if that show gets moved to Friday night. SWAT is not doing particularly well in viewership for kind of a prime time Monday to Thursday audience.
Interesting. I enjoyed the first season. Like I said, I just haven't gotten back to it for this season. But that in and of itself, I guess, says something too. I have stayed current on Bull, and that had a cast, I don't want to say shake up, but a departure. And it's interesting because I was reading about it, and one of the theories I found online, and I'm curious what you think of this one, is that when a when the show decides to remove a character or an actor for whatever reason, the character just kind of walks off into the sunset metaphorically. But if the actor effectively up and quits, that character gets killed off. Which is pretty much exactly what happened with Bull, is one of the actresses had been shepherding a show or a movie or some such. It was going to be her directorial debut, and it's like she wanted to spend time working on that, and it's like, hey, can I get out of the contract or whatever? And yeah, and kills the character off.
Yeah, it's obviously that situation doesn't sound as extreme as others. People get petty and vindictive in these things, and you see it happen. We're talking about Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
When Patrick Dempsey chose, and I mean, he gave the showrunners plenty of time and said, hey, you know what? I'm kind of done with acting. He's really into automobile racing and vintage auto racing, and said, hey, I kind of, you know, maybe I'm going to retire and kind of try to, you know, get more into auto racing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, great. And they killed him off in three episodes and killed him in a car crash. Just kind of.
Yeah.
So there are those. And then there's other situations where, yeah, you have actors that just literally walk off, and then you're kind of almost usually left having to kill them off stage.
Well, and I guess
there's not much else you can do.
Yeah, when the person's not around to do anything with, you've got some problems there. Matter of fact, I think they had that with Criminal Minds when Mandy Patinkin just didn't show up for the third season or something.
Yep.
So I get that. It's just, this was one of those cases where they could have left an out to bring the character back if they wanted to. The fact they didn't, I didn't think spoke well of things.
Bull's in its third season. I see no reason it won't come back for its fourth. That being said, doesn't its title character have some current issues going on with rumor and innuendo? Which, again, I hate that rather than actual charges.
My understanding is there, and I could be totally mistaken on this or this second, third hand, but that there was a lawsuit that was settled for millions of dollars about some of the behavior on how one or two people felt they were treated on the set.
Yeah, particularly one who's a fairly big name in her own right and keeps talking more and more about it. So anyways, that kind of is what it is. Barring, again, most shows can figure out a way to survive when they lose anybody. A title character is a little tough.
And it's funny because one of the other shows I wanted to talk about is one that, just because of the nature of the cast, I think they're a little bit more at risk of losing either a title character or other pivotal character, and that's Murphy Brown, because they've got some fairly older actors in the lead roles.
Yes. Murphy Brown's interesting in the fact that several actors and even, I believe, CBS PR basically kind of did the, hey, thanks, we had a good run, it just didn't work, we're canceled.
Really?
Yes. And then they were kind of quickly all pulled down and said, oh, no, that was a mistake, that was just a rumor. And anyway, I can tell you, looking at these numbers, it's not doing that well. The fact that they continued to air it well into the Christmas week when everything else was in reruns and it was the one new show being broadcast, never good signs. I think that show is probably done, as much due to the fact that it simply didn't have the audience they had hoped for, as much as anything.
It's a shame. It's one of the few sitcoms I actually watched the full season of, and I really enjoyed it. And I was not a particularly big fan of the show when it first aired, just never got around to watching it. But I thought they did some good stuff and got some stuff out into the public discourse that needed to be there. So.
Yeah, but yeah, it I don't think we'll be around. Again, when you see those, oh, it was just a mistake press release, that somebody in the ad sales department usually going, hey, I still got to sell ads. Stop that.
Yeah, my understanding was that they had signed on to do 13 episodes with, we don't want a pickup for the rest of the season kind of thing, but with the option of maybe they'll do another season.
Yeah.
Because again, some of these people are you know, well into retirement age, and TV schedule can be a little grueling. So not wanting to wear them out and burn them out makes sense.
Yeah, no, it is. And when we get to NBC, we'll talk about another show that's kind of similar in that regard. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, I don't want to say it confuses me, but it almost confuses me in the fact that it's a very successful show that continues to do short seasons.
The other show here that I have not watched and haven't decided if it's even going to get on my list or whatever to watch in Ruins or whatever is Magnum P.I.
I've been watching Magnum. It's probably okay. Again, it's borderline. We'll see how it does in the spring. It's not bad. It's also not good, if that makes any sense. Yeah. It kind of is what it is. The pilot's almost a beat-for-beat copy of the original pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, this show suffers from its name as much as anything. They're trying to make callbacks to the original without all the backstory, so some of it doesn't make sense. You know, the Detroit Tigers hat's one of those things they keep trying to force into the show without ever really explaining why Magnum, you know, he's not necessarily, they don't talk about him being from that area of the country or...
Yeah.
A Hawaiian shirt that was given to him. They're trying to make him look more and more like the Tom Selleck version without giving any good reasons for it.
Well, it's funny because I think MacGyver's got a similar problem where they're doing a lot of things or have done a number of things that were references to how things were in the original show.
Mm-hmm.
But having used a few of those names already and gotten rid of those characters, it's getting to where it's less and less like the original show than it could be or ever would be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, I will say this. The Welsh actress, for Tita Weeks, they have playing the new Higgins, I really like. I think she's doing a great job. I think she's the best part of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very different, obviously, than the original Higgins. But similar enough, and you almost have that moonlighting tension between those two characters with her being a female. She's actually the one, I think, really bright spot and kind of unique thing about the new version.
Cool. If it lasts another season or so, I may check it out, but I've got enough TV to watch as it is.
Yeah. Some of the other new shows, Happy Together, I'm pretty sure is already canceled, basically. Did not work. Magnum, we've discussed. The Neighborhood, we've discussed. FBI, doing very, very well for them. That show is, again, a first season show that seems to be a hit. And God Friended Me, a really, really unique concept with a pretty good cast. The gentleman who's the star of the show is actually really good, Brandon Michael Hall. However, the lead, according to the press release, is Violet Bean, who you probably remember as Jesse Quick from the Flash series.
Yeah, I was thinking she was in it. My sister had mentioned this show and that there were some familiar faces on it.
Yeah, and she's really good in it, and kind of a pivotal part of that show. I remember when I first heard about it, I went, boy, this could either be really good or really terrible. As a religious person, I was worried it could be insulting as well. It manages to be none of those things. It's not, I don't want to say it's the greatest show on television, but it's solid. It's doing well enough. Again, how much of that is being bolstered by those Sunday nights after football? We'll have to wait and see in the spring. But right now, it's on fairly solid footing, and I think a pretty good show.
Cool.
Let's see. Anything else on this list that's particularly interesting? Criminal Minds, I think, is finally about done. That's a matter of how much more episodes are worth the syndication. Madam Secretary should have been done for years based on its ratings. Again, how valuable are those shows to syndicators? The NCIS shows, all of them just keep chugging along and doing fine. And Mom, Chuck Lorre, again, Young Sheldon, The Big Bang Theory, now Mom, seems to not be able to do anything wrong these days. So yeah, I don't know. Anything else you have on CBS?
No, I think that does it for me on that. Shall we move on to the CW?
Sure. Why don't you take this one?
Yeah, this is where I'm actually watching a lot of the shows, and, you know, I actually haven't watched all of them for this season. But Flash seems to be doing the best there with a 0.68 average rating. I thought it was basically a really good season so far. The addition of Nora, I haven't pegged her age, and there are times she seems a lot younger than other times.
Or a lot older.
Or a lot older than other times, yeah. Still an interesting character, and I'm curious where they go. Arrow, it's funny because when we started watching these, we started with, I think, Flash, then Supergirl, and then Arrow, again, wanting to build up to watch the crossover. And neither my sister nor I were particularly excited about a prison, you know, based part of a season for Arrow. So that's why it took us a little longer to get into that one. But it was a good season so far. They're doing some good stuff. I think that the show is aging a little bit. And the decision to get rid of the flashback sequences for flash forward sequences. I mean, I can almost imagine people in the writer's room saying, geez, we're going back, you know, 10 years now on these island sequences. You know, what are we going to do? It's like, oh, no, let's go forward 20 or however many they go forward.
That is one of the things that's hard to figure out. Based on the age of some of the kids, I'm like, it could only be 5 or 10, or based on how the makeup and some of the adults, it could be 20 or more.
I was thinking even with the kids, it's got to be like 15 or 20.
Mm, yeah, but those kids are like all 10 or more, and they could easily be in their early 20s, too.
I'm figuring late 20s, early 30s, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Either way, it almost seems, I don't want to say like a parody of itself, but, you know, an obvious reversal, you know, flipping the other direction and stuff like that. And all this talk about the stuff that happened after the events or, you know, whatever.
The event, yeah.
All right. It's not bad. And where they kind of left kind of the mid-season cliffhanger reveal or whatever, I thought was interesting and could be, depending how they play it out in the rest of the season, a really smart move that gives the show a lot longer life. But
it could
we'll
be.
See.
I'll say this. I don't want to say it's the show I was most excited about. I still enjoy The Flash the most. However, the person me and my wife watch these CW shows with is a biggest fan of The Arrow, and therefore we watched it first. I am done with that bad guy.
And Diaz? Oh, yes.
I really hope. It's funny because you and Kate even talked about it on your season wrap-up last year. Like, okay, he's still around. I hope they deal with that in an episode or two, and they didn't.
It's like they took a full season arc for him and started it halfway through last season and we're still having it play out. And it's like, enough.
Yeah. And half of that arc from last season, even though Caden was there, ultimately you kind of found out he was the guy behind it the whole time anyways.
Yeah.
So it's really a whole season of him, even though he wasn't kind of physically there the first half of it.
It's funny because I like the actor from 12 Monkeys.
I like the actor. I like the character. They've got to either take care of it or just he can do an episode or two a season. I don't need him being the driving force every episode for a season and a half.
Yeah, if he had been the constant thorn behind the scenes periodically, you know, every two, three times a season or whatever, and then they finally realize a couple of seasons in, he's been pulling a lot more strings than they realized.
Yep.
That could have been cool, but the fact, oh, we've got to go chase this guy down, we've got to go take care of him, it's obsessive, and I'm over.
Yeah. I go ahead.
This was another season, though, where I think they spent the first half building up what looked to be a minor character to potentially be a big threat for the rest of the season, much like they did with Diaz.
Yeah, interesting. We'll talk afterwards so we don't do any spoilers, because I'm interested to hear who you're thinking. I actually really like what they've done with Felicity.
Yes, it's been a great season for her.
It's interesting. I don't say I like it. Maybe that's not the right word. But they're doing something with her.
Yeah, she's out in the field. They're pushing the sorts of things the character does.
Yeah.
And I think it's fun. Skipping over Riverdale just to finish out the three that had the crossover. Supergirl, overall I've been liking a couple of things here and there with the anti-alien sentiment and stuff. Too much like anti-mutant hysteria. I'm over that, but that's where they're going. The use of Agent Liberty as a villain I thought was interesting and in line with how he was in the comics. But bringing in characters like Manchester Black and stuff like that surprised me. So they're definitely pulling a lot of things out of the comics to use here. There were one or two episodes, and I realized afterwards, after reading, I guess, on IMDb, it was intentional. Like, they started filming with the fourth and fifth episodes because the lead actress was doing something on, like, Broadway or some stage thing, and she was barely in those episodes. And again, shooting schedule, etc., it makes sense, but fortunately they started shooting with those so they could do other episodes that she's actually in to start the season with. That helped a lot. It's one of those that I'm liking it, not as much as I'm liking The Flash, but I think they're doing strong stuff with the three shows. The crossover this year, I don't think was as strong as the Earth X crossover, which was like a you know, two-night, two-hour movie kind of thing that was evenly paced across the episodes. This felt a bit more like here's the Supergirl-centric episode, the Flash-centric episode, and the Arrow-centric episode. But they did some fun stuff with it, and the tease for next year's crossover has me kind of really excited. And it's funny because the episode that would have been the crossover for Legends of Tomorrow actually referenced them not being in the crossover, and I thought actually it was the best episode of that season. Because I really, the Legends of Tomorrow stuff, getting more into the supernatural, the season isn't working for me as well. And I think it's not the plot, but it's their sensibility, their sense of humor or whatever, just doesn't quite align with mine. But they've brought in a couple of more characters here and there. They're spending a lot more time, the temporal department, whatever the hell they call that. They brought in Nate's dad and stuff, the guy who played Biff in Back to the Future. So they're doing some fun stuff. But to me, it's you know, the lesser of those shows, and I haven't even gotten to Black Lightning this season.
Black Lightning I'm enjoying, actually. I was worried at the end of last season. I'm really enjoying this season of Black Lightning. Another show that's doing fine. Legends of Tomorrow is probably the show, if you're going to get rid of one, that would go.
Yeah. Well, do you think they will when they start up Batwoman?
It's going to be interesting. I can see it being Legends. I can also see leaving the Legends alone, depending on the current cast and stars. Arrow is the other one that you arguably could get rid of and replace with a similar style. I mean, you know, the first two, three seasons of Arrow, we were talking, it's just Batman with a bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, Stephen Amell and Emily Rickards and some of them are kind of done, you can keep some of those other supporting cast around in these shows while transitioning that to the Batwoman show, potentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. Again, I don't know. DC Legends is the one I didn't finish last season. Same thing with Supergirl. The only Supergirl episode I actually watched this year was the crossover.
And yeah.
I felt okay about that.
I can understand that.
Well, let me take that. I didn't feel lost in the crossover because I hadn't been watching Supergirl.
Right, right.
And then you've got the CBS shows. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's finally coming to an end, the lowest rated show on television. Dynasty in its second season, not much better. This one is one of those CBS needs something to work. It's just they're keeping along. All American, potentially the one show that proves Greg Berlanti's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is a Warner Brothers show, so that one's mixed. Charmed, again, you're dealing with a CBS. BS production will probably be fine, and same thing with Legacies. And Supernatural, of course, kind of has been the stalwart of that network for years, and that'll just come down to contracts for the actors and if they want to keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I think a couple of the shows, if the leads decide, hey, we're done with it, that kind of could end it if they want to, but otherwise there's... Because I think that's going to be really the deciding factor on... probably Arrow, as it comes down to, like you said, if the leads want to move on and do something else or not.
Well, but I think they're in a... Generally, when that is said about television, generally, the simple answer is you just either replace the lead... Again, the lead... There's usually one person that's irreplaceable. Everybody else is replaceable, for the most part. And in the case of that one person, usually it's just a matter of, okay, fine, how big does that number have to be to get you to keep doing it? And the number of times that doesn't work out is amazingly, amazingly small.
Yeah, I think with a few of these shows that Yeah, it comes down to how big of a check and can they afford to cut it and do they need to?
Yeah. And we saw that this year. By all talk, it seems like CBS, of course, wants the Big Bang Theory to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Jim Parsons is the one guy who probably is the one person they couldn't afford to lose, is the one guy who said, there's no number I'm willing to come back for.
Yeah, that's hard to negotiate with, but also understandable. There comes a point where if you've been doing that role for that long and want to go do other stuff or just are tired of doing it.
The funny thing is he's still going to be the narrator for the other. He's still going to be doing that character.
Yeah, but I think it's different to do a voiceover, which he could presumably go in for an afternoon and knock out.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, doing the sitcom grind all
week. Yeah, very, very true.
So we'll see.
Yep.
I hope, though, with the CW DC shows that they can rotate in some new ones over time. And really, if and when Stephen Amell ever kind of steps away from doing it as his main gig, he stays involved in terms of just continuing to champion that universe and such. Because I think he's done a fairly good job of keeping the fan base loyal and whatnot. I think that helps.
No, I tend to agree on that. I think he's done more than kind of probably anyone other than either Guggenheim or Berlanti to really champion that whole series of shows.
I would be hard-pressed to name anybody on past, particularly DC shows or whatever, that's done a similar kind of cheerleading role. Because certainly Tom Welling did nothing of the sort during Smallville that I'm... and, you know, it's not necessarily an obligation of the lead actor to do that either, or necessarily that they've got the right temperament and personality.
Yeah, he just seems to enjoy it and is really good at it.
Yeah. I would say the other one who's got a similar kind of thing, who seems to be having fun doing the press stuff, is Momoa for Aquaman.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And that may be a turning point for the DC movies.
Well, yeah, and as we record here on December 28th, it is the number one film in America. It's actually tracking, believe it or not, its first week. Now, being that week of Christmas helps, was actually the biggest opening of the year, just above Infinity War and Black Panther so far in 2018.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Aquaman is doing really, really well at the box office, at least as of today.
Huh. Shall we move over to Fox?
Sure. Fox. Fox has taken a different tack. Fox has kind of publicly stated, having sold their studio, that they're getting into event and live broadcasting. They're not as interested in pursuing scripted television as they once were, which is why you notice it's a much shorter list than some of the other networks and shorter than it has been in the past. They took out their Thursday night by bringing in football this year.
Mm-hmm.
They signed a contract next season. They will have professional wrestling on Friday nights for 2 hours, moving from a cable network. So they're really banking on kind of what we were talking about earlier in the way television is consumed. And for live television viewing, kind of live events, special events, things that you have to watch as they're happening, is the tack they're taking.
Makes sense. It also is a good point of differentiation.
It is. So we did have two new shows this season. Well, arguably three, but we can talk about that as we get here. The top show is still Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Not a surprise there. And it's bolstering the number six show, Star, which airs with it. It's got a demo it does very well with. It's not doing as well as it did in its first season, but in its fifth season, Empire is still really strong. The Simpsons in their 30th season, again, doing very well. Part of that is just a built-in loyal audience, and part of that is, again, that Sunday night time slot. Getting the benefit of football overrun is really helping it, particularly in the fall.
Okay.
9-1-1, second season show, premiered last spring. Kind of a police procedural, kind of a fire show, kind of a generic emergency services show. Doing really well. I know it's really popular among some. Have you watched it?
I have not. I think my sister might have.
Yeah, I watched the first two or three, and like the first one, oh, this is really good. And then the second one, personally, I just, and again, this works, so I understand why it's done. The writing feels a little manipulative and too contrived, which is a turnoff to me. I realize some people just go, oh, it's, you know, so touching. Mm-hmm. That's not my take on that style of writing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now to the Friday night slot, which is very interesting. Tim Allen's return with Last Man Standing, a show Fox owned and has owned since it started, that was airing on ABC for a number of seasons. They revived back on the Fox network on Friday nights, again, doing phenomenally well for a Friday night show. You know, a couple of actress changes and other things aside, shows actually doing better than it did when it was, when it left the air.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Over on ABC. And probably my favorite new show of the new season, The Cool Kids, which is also on Friday night, which stars David Alan Greer, Vicki Lawrence, Martin Mull, and oh, what is that other actor's name?
I haven't one even other
Leslie Jordan. It is basically a retirement home, and it's a group of old people kind of having fun in a retirement home. And it stars four kind of legends of television, and the guest star. This is clearly a show made for middle-aged to older people that are home on a Friday night. The guest stars are all classic television stars. Mm-hmm. Jamie Farr has a reoccurring role. Julia Duffy was in an episode. Every time you watch an episode, you're like, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so who was, you know, some star from the 70s or 80s on television. So it really hits the nostalgia button. Plus, I guess the closest thing I could compare it to is kind of like the Golden Girls, except it's three men and one woman instead of all women.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that show I'm really enjoying, actually.
Flew totally under my radar, but it sounds like a great cast.
Yeah, Vicki Lawrence is just one of my favorite actresses anyway, back to the Carol Burnett Show, yeah, and Mama's Family and everything else. But she's really good, and David Alan Greer is phenomenal. It's interesting. In that cast, he's actually the one guy that's got to do the makeup to look older.
Yeah. That's funny. I may have to check that one out.
Yeah, I believe the episodes are all up on Hulu streaming, and I think five of them are up on Fox.com for anybody who doesn't have Hulu to even stream.
Okay.
Family Guy doing well. The Residence, interesting. It's kind of on the bubble. A second season show. It will probably survive because it's a second season show. Rail Howard, they gave a comedy to on Sunday nights. I actually didn't think it was a bad show. I enjoyed Rail. Unfortunately, it has not found an audience, and it does not fit well in that Sunday time slot with The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers and The Family Guy. You got all these animated comedies. And then you put in Rel, who has this much more socially conscious blend of humor. And there's some pretty serious episodes, and no one watched it. I actually thought it was a pretty good show, but it will not survive.
Yeah, hadn't even heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah, and then the last two, Lethal Weapon. Are you still watching it?
I am still watching it. It's funny. When I did the trip to Japan with my sister, we were talking to one of my cousins about it. He'd watched it, and that was when it was just starting to air, so we hadn't seen the first episode or two. He didn't like the new actor who came in, and it's like, yeah, he's done with it. We then came back, watched it. I get exactly where he's coming from. This is one where they took an actor who's playing a character who was, I'm going to say, socially savvy but antisocial, and replaced him with one that was socially awkward but sociable, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's just awkward, you know? Whereas the other one was smooth but kind of a jerk. And I get why they made the character changes to you know, redo the dynamic and such and not make him a carbon copy of the character placing. But man, it changed up the dynamic of the show, and not in a bad way. I'm still enjoying the show, but I can see where people may have bailed on it after that flip over. And then I was hearing there was possibilities of Damon Wayans leaving.
Damon Wayans says he's out. This show is going to die as Fox again looks to get out of scripted television. There's no reason to keep fighting this anymore. I suppose Warner Brothers with a, here's the thing, it's a third season show. I'm sure somebody at Warner Brothers is going, okay, how many of these episodes can we get sucked produced just so we can maybe get a little bit better syndication deal?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I gave it one, maybe two episodes this season. And just went, I can't, I just.
What I would suggest they do, and this would be a little bit of a gamble, is up the action quotient to where you can spend more screen time with, be it car chases or stunt doubles or whatever, giving you less time that you need the lead actors there for, hopefully reducing a little bit of the cost there to play out the, you know, enough episodes to get to the syndication thing.
This is where, in some ways, Damon Wayans was a genius choice. And the biggest problem the show ever encountered in that casting choice. Going back to the films, Rogers the straight.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired a comedian who wanted to be top billed and wanted to be the funny man.
Yeah.
And that's just not Rogers' role in that team. And I think that's, I think that has as much to do with the dynamic shift you're talking about this season. Roger now gets to kind of be the funnier one.
Mm-hmm.
Or the more humorous one.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something Damon probably wanted, or the show, we got this comedian, we got this comedic genius, why don't we make it? But that's not what Lethal Weapon from the movies on was ever built on.
Yeah.
Danny Glover was the straight man, you know?
It's funny because they're doing some great stuff. They're doing it in some ways very much along the lines of the movies, but in other ways, like you're talking about, they're very much against the grain of the original movies.
Yeah.
And I think if they were to, you know, keep it going for a little bit longer, if they want to go into the syndication type stuff, up the action quotient even more, and there are ways they could make it work if they want to. But the question is it worth doing that or not?
Well, that's the thing. It's how big does the check from Warner Brothers to Fox have to be? And is there that much of a return in syndication for them? And then B, if you're Fox, how big does that check have to be to not replace it with your strategy of going to more, you know, reality-based game shows, live events, that kind of thing, to want to take on a scripted show?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like I said, there's kind of two sides to that equation, and both sides are kind of probably looking at a check going, well, how big does it have to be for it to make sense for either of us? And I don't know if either side's going to find a number they're happy with.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's funny because, I mean, the show, the drama on the show is good. The drama about the show is equally entertaining at times.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true, too. And again, I'm not a huge Sean William Scott fan. I don't think he is the problem this season.
No, I don't think so at all.
He's doing a fine job. When I went, oh, my God, they're hiring Stifler? And I thought it was an odd choice, but he's not the problem.
Well, it's funny because I think he's doing a good job with it.
With what he's being asked to do.
Exactly, for the role he was given. And the couple of other things they've kind of swapped out, they got rid of the psychiatrist and Riggs's girlfriend and her kid, with basically replacing him with Cole, the new character's ex-wife and kid.
Yep.
To keep some of the dynamic the same and keep it kind of different. I can see from a writing standpoint why they made a lot of the decisions they did, and I don't think they were bad decisions. But there comes a point where you change enough of the show and it's no longer the show it was.
Well, and that becomes the issue, is I'm not sure anyone, if they'd started out with this season, it might have built an entirely different audience. I'm just not sure the audience it has wants this show, and I'm not sure it's new enough that a new audience is checking it out.
Yeah, anyone who was watching it because of the Riggs character probably checked out because of the Cole character.
Exactly.
And likewise, if it had started with Cole and flipped to Riggs, same thing would have happened.
Exactly. Yep.
So it's interesting to see, again, how they try to retool a show midstream and whatnot. So.
And then The Gifted, which I think is a much more interesting one. This one is not doing as well. Again, Fox kind of steering away. He's not doing promotion. Lethal Weapon and The Gifted both are falling in this, and like you said, you hadn't even heard of the Cool Kids, which they did more promotion for that and Last Man Standing than kind of anything else this year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as Fox gets away from scripted television, they're not doing a lot of work in the advertising of this. What's interesting about The Gifted, I actually think it's pretty good. Are you still watching?
It's on the list. I have not started the season, but I enjoyed the first.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was a pretty good show. I enjoyed this season too. Here's the really interesting. If Fox Studios still existed as Fox Studios, you would simply say, well, with this show and its numbers, they could probably find a way to just move it over to like FX and do fine with it. But again, with Disney buying the studio and basically buying that production back over, it's much more likely those characters end up someplace else when Disney eventually takes the X-Men back.
I was going to say the Disney Plus service or Marvel Plus or whatever they call it. Yeah.
Yeah, it could end up there. It could end up on a Disney cable channel. It, you know, again, you could just scrap the whole idea and start over with the X, you know, not go down this rabbit hole of the X universe.
I don't know. If they can get to where they've collected up all the X-Men movies onto a streaming service, this is a good TV companion piece for it.
Yeah.
I guess to me, it raises the question, not only on this, but also with the Netflix shows. Are the, and it'd probably be different case by case basis or whatever, but is it such that if Fox said, hey, we're done with The Gifted, Disney's gotten their streaming service up, could they just continue the production there? And then likewise, they've already pulled the plug on another season of Luke Cage and Iron Fist. I believe there's at least a 2-year waiting period with the Netflix stuff. But after that point, by that point, they should have the Disney Plus or whatever streaming service going. Could they reactivate those shows with those casts if they wanted to?
Okay, now you're getting into some stuff there's a lot of confusion about.
Yes, hence the question.
And so I will talk to what I know of the contracts and some of the things that are just kind of misinformation out there. Netflix has basically chosen to not continue to make the shows on Marvel. They had contracts that allowed them to continue to make those shows for up to 5 seasons.
Okay.
Netflix is choosing not to. Whether that is because of viewership, which doesn't seem likely, particularly in the case of Daredevil and Punisher, or it's because this is more of a corporate fight between Disney and Netflix. Netflix will own their productions kind of in perpetuity. So Netflix will have the rights to the shows they've already produced because they own them. They made them.
Interesting. So those shows could not move over to a Marvel streaming service.
Barring Marvel, then licensing them from Netflix.
Fair enough. Got it. Okay.
Netflix owns that film.
Got it. So they could, but they'd have to pay for it.
Exactly. Again, Netflix doesn't own the character, but they own that film.
Okay.
So there's that. There is, as you pointed off, there is a time period. I don't know what it is. I've heard 2. I've heard 3 years. I've heard 5 years from the first, essentially a year after the 5-year would have expired for what Netflix had the right to do. There is a period at some point where those characters can revert back to a new Disney production. At that point, how you cast them, how you becomes their choice, and assuming those actors are all, you know, yes, could they cast the same actors? Yes.
Would they it make sense to at that point? Maybe, yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, if you do that, assume you'd want to have the previous, if you want to essentially keep the history and keep the actors, then you've got to make the deal to have the previous seasons available on whatever service these new ones go on.
Well, it's funny because it's conceptually kind of similar to Constantine being on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Because that was, you know, they had, Constantine was running on NBC while Arrow was going. They thought, hey, it'd be cool to do a crossover. Couldn't quite work it. Constantine ended. Then they got him to, oh, we could do a one-time guest star on Arrow. That worked. And then, hey, he shows up again. Now he's a regular on Legends and stuff. It comes down to how badly do they want to do it? How amenable are all the players? And how's the reaction to it?
Well, and again, I don't know who owned Constantine. I don't know who did the production. Was that NBC Studio? Was that Comcast that filmed it? Or was that a Warner Brothers show that was simply airing on NBC?
I'm not sure.
And again, if it was just a Warner Brothers show airing on NBC, it becomes much easier to, you know, pull him over. Like, you know, because I think Constantine, if I'm not mistaken, is available. The NBC shows are available either on one of the CW free streaming services.
Yeah, you know, I thought they were on the
CW Seed, or which is an app that anyone can just download.
And so I think they've even done a cartoon series or animated series for Constantine on the Seed.
Yeah, and again, in that case, if Warner Brothers owned the film, they can kind of do what they want with it once the obligations to who was going to air it have ended. So, we shall see. But yeah, that, you know, the intricacies of this, and again, these next 5 years, I think are going to be interesting. I think we're going to see a lot of services start, a lot of services end.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to come down to, does a more focused streaming thing have enough material to survive? Some will, some won't. And just how many can the average consumer support, and how many of the average consumers do they need to keep it going? I don't know, the math just doesn't seem in favor of studio-centric ones necessarily versus this one's got enough content, I'm happy with it.
Well, and the thing is, the studios now are so big.
True.
That, as we were talking about, you know, companies like Warner Brothers and Disney are talking about having 3 and 4 and possibly more services. At some point, it might become, and this goes back to what we talked about back in the cord cutting episode, and people disliking the cable bundles.
Yeah.
Ultimately, bundling becomes a lot cheaper, and there's a lot more available to everybody in that model. Because sure, you know, cable television, there's hundreds of channels. And yes, you could sell them all for $2 or $3, $5, $10, whatever it is, a piece. But the average person won't get more than a few. And at that point, the cost of those will be the same as what you were paying for the bundle.
Yeah.
When you were selling to everybody.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little while for that model to just kind of work itself out.
Yeah. It definitely will. And there are the free services. You know, people forget when Hulu started, and I don't believe it even has it anymore. There was a free component to it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, many of the networks stream their shows on their individual websites. The problem with that is most of them don't have good apps or ways to not watch them on a traditional browser.
Yeah.
Which again isn't the way most people tend to watch things. They either want it on their phone, their tablet, their TV, whatever. So yeah, it's changing, and it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. You want to move over to last network in NBC?
Yeah, let's do that.
Why don't you start and we'll go from there?
Well, we'll start with the one thing I did watch on this, and that was the item I actually asked you to add because it just aired the other week. The only thing I think I'm watching on NBC was the finale for Timeless. That had ended the second season, actually last season, with the, oh yeah, we're going to do a finale or whatever. And then my sister called me the night of the 20th with a, hey, guess what's airing tonight? Because I totally flew under our radar. There was no advance warning that I was aware of. And just, boom, it's airing. So she came over, we watched it. And it was funny because it was billed as a Christmas special because it's airing at Christmas time, but wasn't really Christmas themed. It was looking like it was going to be a 2-hour kind of TV movie sort of a thing, but it was really just 2 more episodes tacked together to kind of tie things off. And it had payoff for the storyline, yet it was a little lackluster-ish, and having already recorded an episode on the second season, at the end of it, we didn't feel obligated to record another episode just for the 2 episodes. From what you were telling me, the ratings, not so good. Not horrible.
Like I said, you're looking at them. I mean, it's a 0.6 with a 3 share, 3.23 million viewers. To give you an idea, that would place it down near, it would place it in the bottom 4 on NBC, just above 3 shows that essentially are canceled.
Yeah. And, well, this one technically had been canceled already, so it the fact they got this is a bonus.
And again, this was one where Sony spent a lot of money to get this out there so they could sell it as, hey, it's a complete thing in syndication, in streaming, internationally, as, hey, it's a whole thing, it exists, you know.
I'm curious if they're going to offer the 2 episodes as its own DVD since they'd already put out the second season set.
Oh, yeah, put it out like a movie almost.
Yeah.
Even though you say it felt more like 2 episodes.
Oh, it absolutely was 2 episodes. Yeah, I was hoping for more than I got. It wasn't bad. It did have the payoff for the series, so I was happy with that. But they had teased that it could be more than it was.
Yeah.
But really, I don't think I'm watching anything else on NBC these days.
Wow. Okay. America's top rated network. CBS still likes to remind people all the old people watch it, so it's America's most viewed network.
Well, I'm starting to fall into that category before too long of that older group that they cater to.
Yep. Hey, me too. So let's start at the top. This Is Us, the top-rated drama on television in its third season, continues to chug along as one of the top-rated shows on television. That's not going to change. It is what it is. I watched the first season or so, fell off after that, so I don't know much about it since then. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you don't watch it.
Never have, yeah.
The number two show is an interesting. Currently, the highest second average rating for an NBC show is Manifest.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show I am watching. I really like. It's got aspects kind of Heroes, of Lost, of it's kind of this weird sci-fi mystery thing.
Yeah, I remember the promotion for it. They pushed hard for it around Comic-Con time and such, of basically the plane crosses country and doesn't make it and then pops up 5 years or something later, not having aged a day.
Yep. And all the people, as far as we know at this point, all the people on the plane didn't realize anything happened.
Yeah.
They just took off and landed years later. So yes, and there's some interesting science fiction or supernatural elements to going on. And so, yeah, I'm enjoying the show. That being said, that second average rating is a bit of a misnomer. If we go over and we actually look at the individual episodes, which I am pulling up.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now, and I can see where it starts at that, like a 2.2, and then works its way down to a 1.1.
Exactly. It is taking an amazingly similar trajectory to Timeless. A ton of interest early on, which is dwindled significantly as time has gone on. When it debuted at a 2.2 with a 9 share and over 10 million viewers in September, everyone, oh my God, it's a hit. And the last episode that aired the final week of November had a 1.1 with a 5 share and 5.9 million viewers.
Well, it's funny because I think there are some things that are good kind of short form stories that'd be good for a movie or something. Some that are good kind of long form that a TV series is really the right way to explore them. But I think something like this and maybe even Timeless itself fall into that middle ground where you need more time than a movie gives you, but you don't need like an ongoing TV series. And that's kind of like, again, that Netflix sweet spot where you get 10 to 13 episodes or some such, or kind of like the UK format where you get 6 or 8 episodes for a season or a series. And if it's got more or does well, it can get another series.
Yeah, and in the UK, a lot of those episodes are 90 minutes or more.
Yeah.
You know, those aren't always kind of restricted to our 43-minute standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I'm really enjoying Manifest. We were talking on the Slack channel, so I know some other people on the Slack channel are really enjoying it. I think it's kind of neat. Like I said, I really like it. But yeah, it's kind of got that scary trajectory. And boy, I'm blanking on it. NBC has tried this type of weird sci-fi show several times and kind of had similar things happen to them.
Which network was The Event on?
The Event is one of the ones I was thinking of. They also did the one Revolution, where like electricity disappeared.
Right, right. I remember that one.
Those were both NBC.
Okay.
The show me and you really liked, it was kind of like The Human Target, but it wasn't. With the casino.
Oh, the Player.
The Player.
Yeah, yeah.
NBC's had a string of these kind of right up the sci-fi fantasy itch that have started out really strong and just dropped off a cliff over time. Timeless, like we talked about.
Yeah.
So I give them credit for continuing to try. Interestingly enough, none of them seem to work very well.
Well, I wonder, though, if it's just not the right venue for it, because I think a lot of those shows, if they had been on either TNT USA or Sci-Fi Channel or whatever a more appropriate kind of venue would be for where that audience already is, if it would have done better.
And what's really interesting is you mentioned that USA is one of NBC's strongest cable networks, one of the strongest cable networks, period. And USA has done some shows in that vein. There's a current show, I believe, still producing episodes called The Colony, mm-hmm. That is on USA. And as I mentioned, Fox Broadcast, with their move to live kind of event-based, has taken 2 hours of professional wrestling out of USA. So NBC is going to have some holes to fill over there on USA. So maybe Manifest, or probably not Manifest, but my guess is next time NBC tries something like this, they might try it on USA.
Yeah.
Where it might have more success.
Yeah.
Again, The Colony, a similar veined show to the ones we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
Which is doing well for USA.
Well, and I think it comes down to when you think of certain networks, you think of certain types of programming. And even if it's good, if it doesn't really fit, you know, it's kind of being marketed to the wrong group.
Yep. Where NBC is strong, again, is the dramas. You've got all the Chicago shows next, Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD. In its 20th season, Law & Order SVU continues to plug along.
Mm-hmm.
The only drama that really isn't working for NBC is Midnight Texas, which I watched the first season of. This was a show they aired in the summertime a year and a half ago. I said, oh, this did really well. It's based on the Charlene Harris series of novels. The same lady that did the Southern Vampire Mysteries, the Sookie Stackhouse.
True Blood, yeah.
Yeah, the one HBO's True Blood's based on. She did another series of books in a similar vein, similar genre, called the Midnight Texas series. And that's what this show is based on. The show was really good. I enjoyed the first season, but even I haven't watched this season. I think I watched the first 10 minutes of it. Just, it had been so long. I'd kind of forgotten it.
Yeah, I've had a couple of shows that, because of the lapse of time between seasons, it's hard to get back into it.
Yeah. Like I said, Midnight Texas was on in the summertime, and then last summer they renewed it, and they said, oh, this is good enough, let's push it to Prime. So yeah, you had a year and a half between episodes,
mm-hmm.
or between seasons, which was not the way to help a primetime show.
Yeah.
And then where NBC used to be strong and is trying so hard, but not very well, is their comedies. Superstore and The Good Place are their two standouts. They certainly aren't superiorly rated shows, but they do very well for NBC. They're their top two rated in their fourth and third season. The Good Place was the show I referenced earlier, and it continues to do 10 to 13 episode seasons and show them in one half of the year, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing full runs. The 9 Good Places that have aired, I believe, are the 9 that were aired this season. I don't think that show's coming back in the spring. Superstore, again, kind of their one close to a hit in their comedies in its fourth season, is doing fine. Will and Grace continues to lose momentum, but in its third season back, I believe, will probably continue just because NBC has trouble there. And the new one they tried this season, which I actually really enjoyed, but again, clearly didn't do well, was I Feel Bad, which starred Soraya Blue as a mother, working mother, and kind of the things that go along with that. That show's probably done. They actually aired 2 episodes again here this week, this Christmas week, when everything else was in reruns, which is kind of one of those classic signs of, okay, we produced them, let's get rid of them and burn them off.
Yeah, I actually saw a promo that they were doing 2 back-to-back or whatever, and I'm like, I haven't even heard of this show, and they're doing 2 in a row during Christmas week. Yeah, even I could put 2 and 2 together. That's not good.
Yeah, exactly. Again, I like the show. And then Blind Spot, they got into its fourth season. They will get it 4 seasons and into syndication, but again, not close to where it once was. Especially considering you have, what's its name coming back? The James Spader show will be back in the spring.
Oh, Blacklist.
The Blacklist, yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll probably get that Blind Spot spot.
Makes sense.
And then I did do some special events. I was telling John earlier this year, special events minus a few really aren't delivering like they used to. Things like the Academy of Country Music Awards, various Christmas specials, etc. don't seem to have the ratings juice they had in years gone by. The World Series, there's only five games this year, but again, very, very well received. What did those five games average? Those five games averaged a 3.5 rating, which again for baseball is very solid. Fox has to be happy with that. About 13.6 million viewers per game. Boston, of course, always a good thing for the ratings. Houston, Boston had a great series. So yeah, it was what it was. The Emmys actually had a bit of a bounce back year with a 2.4 rating in September. The Miss America and Miss Universe. Miss America did not. No one's watching anymore. Miss Universe, which aired last week, I didn't even bother to track because it was also abysmal. Obviously, we've got the Super Bowl, the NFL, AFC, and NFC title games, and the Oscars coming. And so it'll be interesting to see how those do.
Yeah. Well, and again, things like the World Series, that's if you're going to watch it, you're going to watch it live.
Yes.
So I can see where that's got the draw.
Yeah, yeah. And you had Boston, L.A. You had Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox. This was, again, a particularly good year for baseball in that regard. Mm-hmm. They just got lucky. You know, you could have ended up with Milwaukee, Houston, and the numbers would have been half what they are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't really watch sports, so, you know, it doesn't faze me either way, but I could see where the fans would care.
And, of course, it'll be interesting to see what happens as, again, we record on the 28th. The college football playoffs actually moved their games from New Year's Day to the Saturday before New Year's. I expect those numbers to be huge for ESPN tomorrow with the two semifinal games.
Cool.
So, yeah. And I don't know. You have any other questions or anything else you want to talk about?
None that come to mind at the moment. Again, there's a lot of stuff that, on some networks, I'm just not watching any of their shows. There's others where I'm watching a lot, and, on quite a few, what I'm watching is, you know, the lower tier stuff, but it comes down to, there's just so much coming out. There's a lot of different audiences being served. So kind of makes sense. And again, it just amazes me how many other shows I watch that just aren't on the networks. Therefore, we don't cover the numbers. Everything from, you know, The Last Ship to the Netflix shows to Krypton on Sci-Fi and stuff like that. So these shows are not only competing with what else is on the other stations or networks and stuff, but, you know, the streaming services and other places to go watch stuff. It's an increasingly competitive market.
Yes, and with over 700 shows being produced, at competition, I don't see going down anytime soon.
No, and it's, you know, again, there's so many more coming out and waiting in the wings. It's just amazing.
Yep.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.